You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. David Amber, Hockey Night Canada Sportsnet NHL host, is going to join us in just a moment here. The highlight of hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. He joins us every Monday here on the Halford and Brough Show. David Amber, Sportsnet's very own, here on Sportsnet 650. Morning, David. How are you?
Here we go, guys. Final week of the regular season. Let's do this.
Four Canadian teams on their way to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that includes the Vancouver Canucks. Curious to get your thoughts on the Canucks' big 3-1 victory over Edmonton in Edmonton on a Saturday, a win that put the Canucks just 1 point away from clinching the Pacific Division title.
Listen, I think it's impressive. I think it's impressive top to finish. They've been really consistent. That's the number one thing you could say about the Canucks. It hasn't been these incredible swings one way or another. The lows haven't been too low. They certainly have had some amazing highs this year. It was a workmanlike performance. And again, they weren't relying on Miller and, you know, I almost said Horvat. Oh my God, it's early in the morning for me. They certainly weren't relying on Bo Horvat. They weren't relying on Pettersson and Miller and those guys and Besser. So, you know, it was the lunch pail guys helping out and playing a very serviceable game. One of the most shrewd moves, again, we saw this on Saturday, was picking up Casey DeSmith right before the season began. People didn't think much of it at the time. I didn't think that much of it. But again, all sorts of credit to Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, and their management group by sort of identifying some of the needs the team had, addressing them, and here's the final product. So it's going to be amazing, guys. I mean, you know, they're almost pick-ems in most of these series. We're going to have eight series, which I think, you know, five or six of them, if they went either way, you won't really blink an eye. And then a couple of them, I guess, we'd be much more surprised about. But, you know, the West is a very, very strong conference. I would say the top six in the West all have Stanley Cup aspirations, really. So, I know Vegas is in the wild card too right now, but I just mean I include them in the Stanley Cup aspirations. I'd say maybe Nashville and LA are the only teams maybe going into this without, you know, maybe thinking we're going to go and win a Stanley Cup or have the potential to. I put Vancouver in that group just because of how consistent and how good they've been and how they have had this great balanced attack. So, it's impressive, guys. I know there was no Connor McDavid. In fact, it's funny, I was talking last night with some of the guys I work with on the panel and said, you know, maybe the best candidacy for Connor McDavid's MVP, resume is the fact how bad Edmonton is without him. You know, maybe that speaks volumes more than his 130 whatever points. It's just, man, without him, they look very pedestrian, which obviously makes sense when you take out the best player in the world.
What's the story with him anyway?
I don't know. They have three more games. The way it was put to us a lot was that was more precautionary, and it's not, uh-oh. But, you know, one game you say, okay, two games, okay, and then you kind of go, I wonder what's going on here. I guess you could argue the other side of the ledger. What would he be returning for? The Oilers are basically cemented in on the number two spot. They know they're starting at home. They don't know who they're starting against. He's no longer in contention for the Art Ross. You know, he's 11 points or 10 points, whatever it is, behind Kucherov. That's not, well, I mean, anything could happen, but chances are that's not going to happen. He's here to win a Stanley Cup. That's what he cares about. And if he's at 95%, why not wait to get to him to 100%, I guess, is what the precautionary measure would be. That's a great question. This is what we believe to be the case. And maybe it is more severe, but I don't know. We don't know. And that's the great mystery surrounding the Oilers. You'd like to think they're not going to start him, you know, night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, having not played in 2 weeks. I'd like to think he's going to get into at least one of these games this week, but I guess time will tell.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about me, did Edmonton have anything to play for and the value of finishing first and the matchups, because I was also tasked with doing a lot of the NBA prep for today's show because their playoff field is set. And I went back and was reading over a bunch of stuff last night. Like, Cleveland Cavs fans were livid that they didn't go out and try and win their final game of the regular season and avoid Boston in that side of the bracket. So, like, it's almost the polarizing view of it where one fan base is super irate that they didn't go after it. And then you've got, and I don't know how Oilers fans are feeling, because I guess it's still technically up for grabs, but I did want to set this up to ask you, like, how much have you already started looking at, because I know I've done it, a Vancouver-Nashville first-round matchup, or as a professional broadcaster, are you not allowing yourself to go there just yet?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to do all my prep until I have to know what the matchup is.
Sure.
But I'm really, it's funny, I was at dinner last night with Justin Williams and Luke Gazdick, two of our panelists on Rogers Monday Night Hockey, and I said, I really hope Dallas and Vegas play. I was kind of pissed when Vegas came back from the 3-0 deficit. I really want to see those two juggernauts. One, as a hockey fan, I mean, Dallas versus Vegas, I mean, that's a conference final caliber matchup. To have that in the first round would be really exciting. And secondly, as you know, I'm Mr. Canada when it comes to, you know, trying to get a Stanley Cup back in this country. To me, those might be the two hardest opponents for anyone to have to deal with. As good as Colorado's been, they're not as deep as Vegas or as Dallas, in my opinion. So have one of those two go out, have the Canadian teams avoid them, and hopefully have to deal with them at a later date. So it's all very strategic, and that would mean Vancouver and Nashville, which I'm not sleeping on the Nashville Predators. I mean, they're a very good team. No team has been hotter than the Nashville Predators over the last, 10 weeks now, right? I mean, it's been unbelievable, the streak they put together. Having said that, I still look at them as a lesser opponent in many respects than Dallas or Vegas.
What happened when Winnipeg went into Colorado over the weekend? What, I didn't watch that game, and then a bunch of people texted me. I was like, "Is Colorado playing any of its players today? They lose 7-0. Not only did lose 7-0, they lost. That was in Denver as well."
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's so funny. It's such a game of runs. We always talk about basketball as a game of runs within the game. Well, within the season, it's a series of runs, and Winnipeg has been on both sides of the pendulum. They're on that horrible 6-game losing streak. They finally got some traction. You know, Rick Bowness was pulling his hair out just trying to get these guys to play a more consistent brand of hockey and make fewer mistakes, and they've settled into that, you know, nicely. And Saturday was a culmination of how they're feeling it right now. They're healthy again as well. You know, Toffoli was out for a little bit. We all know how good he can be. Gabe Vilardi might be that X-factor guy for him, right? He's a guy, when he's healthy, he's like a 40-goal guy. Unfortunately, he never plays 82 games, but he's back, he's healthy, he's contributing. They look great. Hellebuck was there doing his thing, you know, certainly going to be given some heart consideration, guys. And I think Winnipeg understood the significance of getting home ice advantage, even though they haven't been great on home ice in the playoffs in the last few years. They don't want to have to go into Colorado and have to beat Colorado at least once on home ice. And I know they just did that on Saturday, but, you know, look at the splits, look at Nathan MacKinnon's splits at home and away, right? He had points in the first, whatever it was, 36 home games or something like that. You want that final matchup. You want that, you know, really intense crowd in Winnipeg to be on your side. It was important. I think Winnipeg went in there with a certain level of desperation to wrestle away home ice advantage, and they haven't fully got it yet, but they're closing in on it, right? They basically need a point or two to solidify it in their final two games. So really big, you know, last 2 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets, and that's going to be a fantastic series. I think that's going to be, you know, I don't see that going fewer than 6 games, and quite possibly will be going 7 games. So something to be excited about there as well.
Hey, David, what's the main focus with the Leafs right now? Is it Austin Matthews trying to get to 70 goals? Is it Ilya Samsonov having a couple of outings, back-to-back outings, where I think he's allowed combined 11 goals? Is it that the Leafs are either going to play Florida or Boston, probably Florida? Like, what are people talking about with the Leafs these days?
I'm going to pick item D, which is staying healthy. It was not just the loss on Saturday night. It wasn't just Samsonov having back-to-back subpar performances, but they had both Brian McCabe and McMahon leave the game with injuries. And that's going to probably factor into, you mentioned Austin Matthews was 70, and Sheldon Keefe postgame on Saturday said, you know, it was a bit of a distraction. Every time he touched the puck, the crowd was in great anticipation, which, you know, you think you kind of want your home crowd to be in great anticipation, but I think his players fed off of that, and it was just too much deferential, you know, trying to set up Austin Matthews as opposed to trying to play a proper hockey game. And at moments, I could see what he's saying. But it, what makes it interesting is you have Bobby McMahon, you have McCabe leave with injuries. Sorry, not Brian McCabe, Jake McCabe, obviously, leave with injuries. And you know, you have to wonder, would it behoove them to play Austin Matthews, even though he's trying to grab 70? They got to go into Florida to play against the team that would surely have the types of guys who will be taking runs at Austin Matthews, and knowing that they have a first-round series starting on Saturday. And then they have to go in the next night to Tampa. What you might want to do is on Tuesday night not play him against Florida, and then Wednesday night you play him in Tampa, which could be a more run-and-gun style, and you won't be playing them in the first round, and give Matthews the opportunity to get 70, keep the legs fresh or whatever. So I can't wait to see how the Leafs manage this, but I know, you know, after seeing two of their players leave on Saturday injured, I'm sure they're giving them second thoughts on, you know, Nylander, Marner, Riley, you know, Tavares, et cetera. Like, what do you do with these guys? You're playing to win in the playoffs. This isn't about 70-goal milestones or anything else.
We're talking hockey with David Amber on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. David, is the NHL really going to give Alex Morello another chance to own an NHL team?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't know. Do I think there'll be hockey someday, NHL hockey back in Arizona? You know, based on everything the league is saying, based on the fact that's a very desirable market, has a lot of money, it sort of fits the bill of what the NHL has been doing lately. Look at the marketplaces they're going into. They're going into big burgeoning centers where there's a lot of, you know, whether it's Vegas with its tourism, whether it's Seattle with its tech, you know, obviously Arizona with its tourism and other industries there. It has a lot of the finances to drive a situation, but they might be done with Alex Morello. And I believe there'll be language him having the first right of refusal, but they're going to introduce all sorts of hurdles, you know, that he has to, you know, and it's just, and it's not
literal of hurdles. Maybe you have to jump over this 100-foot.
Yeah. It's just, it hasn't gone swimmingly at all. And I think the ownership group has to take a lot of the responsibility there. And, you know, you've heard, you know, there was a big investigation into not paying bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just hasn't been smooth. And the NHL might have other suitors there. I mean, you have two different groups fighting for a team in Atlanta. You have, there are people who want NHL franchises. They see the value in having an NHL franchise. And if you could have a more stable ownership group who takes it to that marketplace, it could work out well for both the NHL and for that new ownership group. And I'm not sure that's going to be Morello.
You know, I'm sure the other NHL owners are happy with franchise values these days, but there must be, I don't know, take the owners out of the equation. How does it strike you that Alex Morello is probably going to make hundreds of millions of dollars in profits on the sale of the Coyotes to the NHL, which is then going to flip them to Ryan Smith?
It's funny. Certainly, you know, I didn't go to business school, but I can't imagine this is how to run a business 101, but it might work out in the long run. I mean, the numbers we're hearing are Ryan Smith paying $1.2 billion, the NHL basically giving Morello $100 million of that, taking $200 to split up with the owners, I guess. And, you know, $1 billion, you know, he has a lot of debt to pay off from the sounds of it. But you're right, he'd be making off like a bandit. And I don't know. You know, maybe just the business model is so good right now that it's a can't lose proposition. You have to have that money up front to get a team. But once you get a team, I mean, look at Foley in Vegas. He got a steal of a deal seemingly at $500 million, right?
Yeah, but then he put money into the franchise and they won Stanley Cups, right? Like, he's done a pretty good job. It just seems like this guy went in there, and maybe it was desperation that allowed or that led to the NHL allowing Alex Morello to buy a team. Remember, he tried to buy an NBA team, and that didn't happen for him. And then they're so desperate to keep this market alive that they go to a guy with like Alex Morello, and then all sorts of stories about how he runs his business, how the morale is pretty low among people, how, you know, the culture is maybe even toxic in the Coyotes. And, You know, what really struck me was hearing Elliot Friedman talk about Alex Morello on the 32 Thoughts podcast, because Friedge is usually so measured, but like you could hear the, I don't know if Friedge felt that he was fooled by this guy, but it just feels like there's a lot of people in NHL circles, including the players, maybe other owners, maybe, I don't know what the commissioner thinks of all this, but like it feels like there's a lot of people that are just really angry and basically saying, like, Alex Morello, this guy lied to us.
You know what? It's another cautionary tale for the NHL, and this isn't the first time. We had Len Barry and all sorts of problems in Tampa. Andrew Barraway, who used to own the Coyotes, you know, he went into bankruptcy. The league had to buy the team from him. I mean, it's been a series. Jim Belcilli, they dodged a massive bullet. Have you guys seen the Black Barry
movie? Oh, yeah, that's great. Do you remember Boots Del Baggio? Predators, like there have been some guys that they've allowed to own and run hockey teams. In a lot of cases, it seems like they're like, okay, this might not be ideal, but we're committed to this idea, we're committed to this market, let's give them a shot. And then it kind of blows up in their faces.
Yeah, honestly, that's happened. We just named a handful of times it's happened. And I think, you know, if anything, it's a cautionary tale and the due diligence that's going to go in. They've obviously feel very comfortable with Ryan Smith, who by all accounts is an incredibly successful business person and, you know, the kind of guy, young, progressive, smart, that you want leading one of your franchises. So, you know, sometimes people get mesmerized by the mighty dollar and people are, you know, pitching you something, even though if it's, you know, what did your grandmother used to say to you and to me, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. And it's felt that it feels that way. It feels like, I wouldn't say the word duped seems like a strong word, but they certainly, I think, were maybe sold a bill of goods with some of these ownership groups, you know, specifically now with Alex Morello, that we find out very quickly are too good to be true. So I do think hockey will end up back down in the desert because I think there's an appetite for it, but I definitely think it could be with a different owner.
Four Canadian teams on their way to the playoffs. Montreal, not one of them, but Montreal will have a pretty big say in who goes to the playoffs because they play their final two games of the season against the Detroit Red Wings, who for me are the most interesting team going into this final week of the playoffs. That game is on Sportsnet tonight, so David, with that, we'll let you go. Enjoy the games tonight and the rest of this week. Final week of the regular season should be pretty good. We'll do this again next Monday. We'll be talking playoffs.
I can't wait, guys. Let's see how this all plays out. Thanks again for having me, and enjoy the final games of the year.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it, bud. That's David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So really, it is a weird schedule. Montreal goes to Detroit tonight and then hosts Detroit tomorrow night.
Right.
And that's it for Montreal. And Detroit, again, I'm not trying to push this particular narrative, but the team to me, especially from a Canucks perspective, because the games against Detroit this year have been muy caliente.
Yeah, spicy.
And they've got the longest drought, not from the Buffalo Sabres, but the longest drought in the NHL of teams that can actually snap it this year. And they play such a unique, and by unique, I mean sloppy, but unique brand of hockey where they're in it. They're in the chase. Like, look at these are their, they're supposed to be playing tight to the vest. You know, we're going to keep it. These are their scores over the last little bit. They lost 7-4 to Tampa Bay. They lost 4-2 to Toronto. They lost 5-2 to the Rangers. They beat, or sorry, those are the Montreal scores. I got them backwards. Detroit, last couple games, 6-5 loss to the Penguins in overtime, which the Penguins desperately needed. That was Sidney Crosby's 1,000th assist, and that was the Erik Karlsson game. 5-4 against the Leafs. They've had a 4-3 game, 4-2 game. So they play really high-scoring games, even down the stretch here.
They're actually quite entertaining games, too, because they've got a ton of speed. They've got a ton of skill. Just defensively, sometimes you're like, what are you guys doing? Anything? Yeah. Anything there?
Now, I also want to mention this because sometimes I like to throw out a little red meat to the listenership. You know how on occasion in Vancouver, we complain about an Eastern bias or like Toronto being the center of the universe and everyone's always focused on the Leafs and it's always about the Leafs and then there's all these other teams. Now, this is from the lead at NHL.com. And I feel bad because Dave McCarthy wrote it for NHL.com, and he's a good guy. He works for SiriusXM, a good broadcaster. He was just writing how he thought the story. But the lead from Saturday's game in Toronto, where the Detroit Red Wings staged a miraculous win to stave off playoff elimination. Here's the lead. Toronto, Auston Matthews scored his 69th goal of the season. But the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Detroit Red Wings 5-4 in overtime at Scotiabank Arena on Saturday. These are the small snippets of media sometimes that people point to when they say, is Toronto really the center of the universe? I mean, all due respect to Auston Matthews scoring his 69th goal of the year, which is a nice total.
Very nice.
Let's be real here. The chase for 70 is kind of cool. And I think it's great. I think if he hits the mark, it's newsworthy. But it's not newsworthy until he hits the mark.
It interests me on a level of 1 out of 10.
It's
just a number.
It'll be cool if he gets it. A lot of guys haven't done it. I understand that, you know, Toronto's doing backflips about him potentially joining this rare pantheon of NHLers that have scored.
If he doesn't do it, he is a much lesser player. But he's barely a goal scorer he only gets 69 goals.
I mean, what are you at that point? A 69 goal scorer?
Yeah.
Which admittedly is nice.
Yeah, for me, and maybe this is just my selfless kind of, it's all about the team. Like, you know who I am. You know how I am.
Most selfless guy I know.
First right? thing it's I all think about of when team. I try to describe you.
Yeah. It's not about the name on the back.
Yeah.
It's about the logo on the front.
Yeah.
I also put my name on the front, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Welcome to Team Prof.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, like, whether or not Detroit gets into the playoffs is so much more interesting than whether or not Auston Matthews hits the 70 goal mark.
I understand.
Like, it's almost like the I'm not going to go down that line because I think this would be interesting regardless. But, you know, for me, it's like, this is why I don't like watching games with people that are playing fantasy sports. They're like, how many yards did that guy get on that run? I'm like, I don't care. First down or not?
I'm just going to say this. In a game where a team is facing playoff elimination and they come back and have a dramatic win in overtime, that's the story.
Well, yeah, and they blew, like, they had a 4-1 lead, right? And they blew it.
Right. That's the story.
Yeah.
Not one guy got one goal closer to a mark that, quite frankly, means nothing to nobody outside of Toronto.
Do you know what, though? I bet that he was influenced, the writer of that article, was influenced by being in Toronto.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the talk in Toronto.
That is the absolute.
And Sheldon Keefe has been saying, like, every time Matthews is on the ice now, you know, people are like, what's it? Do the thing where you score, right?
Yeah. Now score that 70th. Don't stay on 69. Everyone's talking about the this, and I know you posed the question to David, and I thought he was going to just say it's all Matthews, because if you watch 5 minutes of content out of Toronto right now, it's Matthews. And I can't really tell if it's a good thing, because it's almost taken away from their incessant playoff failures and the fact that this...
It's a good distraction.
Yeah, it is a good distraction.
Yeah.
For the all we said about the Leafs this year was, like, just fast track to the playoffs where you'll either more than likely fail once again, or maybe you'll be able to reverse the narrative. But now, the regular season, in a very weird twist of fate, has actually mattered, because they're chasing, and by they, I mean Matthews, is chasing this rather elusive 70 goal
Maybe
mark.
He doesn't want to get the 70th for the memes.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program.
Can you dig it?
Sure can. Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst with NHL Network and MSG Networks, is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two. It's brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Final week of the NHL regular season is upon us. So much to be decided. For the New York teams, the Islanders can clinch a playoff spot with a win in any fashion tonight. The New York Rangers can clinch the President's Trophy with a win in any fashion tonight. And those two teams played A real fun game over the weekend. Our next guest was watching it. Joining us now, as mentioned, former NHL defenseman Thomas Hickey here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Thomas. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm good. Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot to be decided here in the next couple days. So I've got my eyes on that. In particular, a game in New Jersey tonight. I'll be taking the train in later, seeing the Islanders a chance to clinch, like you said, with a win in any fashion. So, so much left to be decided. But at least for the New York Islanders, they control their fate, unlike some of these other teams. But it's getting down to the wire here.
I think sometimes I refer to things as a roller coaster too often, but the Islanders season truly, especially these last 2 months, after Patrick Waugh's come on board, they had a 6-game win streak in late February that stretched into early March, followed by a 6-game losing streak, followed by another 6-game winning streak, which came to an end on Saturday with that shootout loss to the Rangers. Whatever the case with the streaks, like, the bottom line is that the Islanders are in. How exactly have they been able to do this rally and make the playoffs under Patrick Waugh?
I'm not sure. Honestly, it's been so volatile. It's been so up and down. This is, I think, unlike any other year that this group has had, because, you know, even last year, it was late when they got in, final weekend of the season, but it was a little bit more of a gradual, steady thing. And this year it's been completely different. I mean, especially with the coaching change and that taking some time to sort of settle in. But up to 2.5-3 weeks ago, it looked like they were dead and out. But I think this year, with how poor the Metro has been, really surprised me. You know, I think for years it's sort of been the strongest division in hockey, or at least on most years it's, you know, you've got a bunch of teams that you could see doing damage in the playoffs. This year, it's so much different. And for the Islanders, they just sort of stuck with it. They're an inconsistent group, but as the other teams sort of faltered, they got better and better. And I think the timing was just perfect. And now, points in 7 games in a row, it actually looks like a group that I don't think many teams would want to face in the first round, just because they've got a couple goaltenders going. They've got a lot of high-end scoring right at the top of their lineup, and then everything sort of just is falling into place right now for them. So it's been a weird season for sure. I think a tough one for New York Islanders fans, but it's sort of what you're doing right in the moment, and right now things are going really good for them.
What is the identity of that team? Because a few years ago when they were coached by Barry Trotz, we knew what their identity was. They even had a line. It was called the Identity Line. What is the Islanders' identity now?
That's so true. It's a completely different identity. It's not a defense first hockey team anymore. They're not going to smother you and, you know, snuff you out and win 1-0 games anymore. That's really not it. But in saying that, the games that they have won, the 7-game point streak that they've been on, defense has been much better. The identity right now is not like it was before, of a team that's going to forecheck you to death. Right now, it's their high-end players, Barzal, Horvat. They've been phenomenal. This is a group that sort of relies on its top-end guys to perform for them and get good goaltending, but sort of a team that is scary in the sense that you can outplay them maybe for half the game, but lately they haven't given up a ton of quality chances when they've been getting outplayed. So maybe one of those teams, the identity would be one of those teams that hangs around just long enough, and then its top guys will strike you and get you, and that includes the goaltenders. So not a great identity to have, but it is something that's been working for them.
I mentioned the New York Rangers earlier. They beat the Isles over the weekend, so they can clinch the President's Trophy tonight with a win of any fashion. That'll put them past the Carolina Hurricanes, who are the only other team really challenging right now. With this Rangers team, all due respect to a terrific regular season that's going to likely see them finish top in the standings, is their season going to be purely defined by whether they can go a little bit further, and by mean a little bit, a lot further in the playoffs than they have in years past?
Absolutely. I think without a question for me, especially after last year, they had a good year and then you lose New Jersey in the playoffs. It's, you know, tough for a lot of teams being in a big market and having those expectations. But if you do win a President's Trophy, or let's just say you're 1 point shy of it, for this New York Rangers group, the foundation's there. You know, obviously they can come back and be as good next year, but the question's going to remain, what can they do in the playoffs? And for that group, if you don't go 2-3 rounds and show that you can really contend and compete, I think is the biggest thing for them. And there's been moments that they've banded together and look more like a team that they have in the past. But you got to start asking questions if this group can't make a bit of a serious run. And for as good as things have gone, you want the players that have been elite during the regular season to show up in the playoffs as well. So I think there's a ton of pressure on them. It's not enough to make it or to win a President's Trophy. I think their season's going to be defined about what they do in the playoffs.
Who would be your favorite in a series between Tampa Bay and Boston?
That is so difficult because those are two teams that I continue to say that every time I doubt them, they make me look bad. But from what I've seen out of Tampa in the past month of hockey, I've been extremely impressed. And that is no consolation prize for being the second best team in the conference points-wise in Boston, yeah, and potentially ending up with a Tampa matchup. It's just not fair. But Vasilevsky is back. You know, he had that surgery at the start of the year. It took some time, and with how well Kucherov's playing, I mean, look at Stamkos' numbers in the past 3 weeks as well. He might hit 40 goals once again. They're firing right now, and I think it's scary to think that they're more rested than they have been in probably 4 years, just with having the first round loss last year to Toronto. So I'd go with Tampa right now, and reluctant to not choose either of those teams to win a playoff series, but Tampa looks as good as I've seen them in a couple of years.
How does it change in your mind? I mean, the big question with Boston heading into this year was going to be, how are they going to do without Patrice Bergeron and I suppose to a lesser extent, David Krejci. Well, how are they going to do with, you know, Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle as their top two centers? And the answer has been pretty well, actually. Does that change at all in the playoffs when you have these best of seven series, when there are matchups? I mean, they're going to match up against a Tampa Bay team that has Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli as their top two centers, and I think you'd take those two over Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, with all due respect to those two, every day of the week.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. The one thing I will say about Charlie Coyle is he's stepped up, and I don't really care about his production as much as I care about that when he digs in, and I think now with a bigger role, I don't mind seeing him match up against anyone, really. He's big, he's strong, he's physical, he's got a good offensive side to him too. So that's a guy that's really stepped into a bigger role and impressed me. So we'll call him your first-line center, second-line center. Maybe it doesn't fit the offense that you're looking for, but he's played really well. But yeah, in Zacha, really good player, right? But not a guy that you've thought of in that position for a long time. And then even throughout their lineup, you know, Boquist is a guy that was a cast-off from New Jersey. They've sort of rotated people in on their fourth line, and Geeky's done really well for them. But I think the Boston Bruins, more than any other team in the NHL, at least over the last decade, is it's not really about the personnel. It's about the personality of the team, and they all seem to play the same way, and that's what makes them good. And I think even with Bergeron and Krejci there was years when they had a bunch of guys that I would go in and play them, look at the roster, I don't know many of these guys, and I'm a pretty well-read player. I haven't seen a lot of these guys that they drafted, and guys just play that system, and maybe because of Krejci and Bergeron and Chara, the sort of infrastructure that they have and how well they play as a group, it sort of takes away from not having the high-end guys in their lineup. But certainly it's going to be a bigger task this year with less center depth than they've had before.
We're speaking to Thomas Hickey here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Thomas, of course, former NHL defenseman, now with MSG and NHL Networks as an NHL analyst. We're looking at that race for the final wildcard spot in the East, Thomas, and somehow Philadelphia Flyers are still sticking around. Now, the percentages are working against them with just one game left in the regular season, but they're still in it. And this is almost, I would say, in spite of their head coach at times, especially over the last month of the season. Now, you had a long NHL career. You played under a bunch of different head coaches. What did you think of the way that Torts went about I'll call it trying to motivate, but trying to motivate his team down the stretch. And ultimately, it seems like they might end up falling short of the playoffs because of it.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Like, I think there's times this year that if you would ask me who should win the Jack Adams, John Tortorella's name would be right up there. And then at the same time, as things have crumbled, I think it's human nature for us to question, okay, was it too much? Did he make the mistakes? Well, they're in the position they are for a reason, right? I think it's a group that's overachieved all year. The only thing that I think it would be fair for me to comment on is the whole Couturier. I don't want to call it a saga, but I didn't really love the way that that was handled. And they came out and won a couple games in a row, beat really good teams. And since that point on, it's been not so good for them. Look, they simply don't have the goaltending, and they've been – don't really have the depth, and somehow they've treaded above water. But, you know, I guess the only thing I would say is you don't want the coach being the main storyline, and John Tortorella has. But the only thing I really have an issue with this year is the way he dealt with Couturier. But this is a guy that, you know, he's really confident in who he is and how he approaches things, and I don't think he's really changed or he's looking for more headlines. It's just we're paying more attention to him because he's done a job with the team that on paper really wasn't that good and overachieved so much. So if they find a way in, full credit to him. And if they don't, I think it's easy to point to him and say he's the reason they didn't. But I think without being in that room, without knowing, it's not really fair to say. But he's a guy that's going to get Jack Adams votes if this team sneaks into the playoffs. So it's all over the map with him. But I think it's a group that's really overachieved, but sometimes you wonder if it's too much of a storyline every day. But I continue to find myself being confused at how to look at that whole situation.
Speaking of coaches, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto said of Auston Matthews' pursuit of 70 goals, "That's a major distraction. It doesn't help us what we're trying to accomplish on the ice. But it's exciting, and it's especially when he gets to 69, you can see it. It's growing. It's the fan. You know, the fans are excited, and he's happy for the fans. But him calling it a major distraction and the fact it doesn't help us. What do you think of that?
I think that's just a coach being blunt and honest, and I don't mind that. I think, you know, the one thing I've learned about Sheldon Keefe over the last couple of years is, you know, he's dug his heels in when it comes to moving his lineups around or benching star players. He's firm with everything he says. And I think for him, that's fair. I think for the game of hockey, for the position I'm in, I mean, it's a great distraction. I don't think it's a bad distraction at all, but for a Toronto team that's just trying to get primed into a playoff spot, it's a lot of noise. But if there's one thing that we've learned about Auston Matthews is he can compartmentalize and he can still go out and play good defensive hockey without sacrificing anything. So I don't think it's a big deal for Toronto, especially sitting where they are right now. It's a group that's not going to move up in the standings. It's not going to move down in the standings. It's totally fine for me. So I think it'd be great for the game if Matthews gets to 70. And as much as it might be a distraction for Sheldon Keefe and the media around the group, at least he's got a guy in Matthews that seems to be unfazed by all these things.
Who's your Hart Trophy winner?
That's such a tough one. I mean, I've talked about it, and I think the biggest thing is who ends up number four on the ballots, because that's going to be the guy that gets cheated more than any. It depends how you vote, right? Like, is it the most valuable player? Is that what everyone's voting for? Because the guy who wins the Ted Lindsay is the most outstanding player, and the guy that wins the most valuable player, to me, are probably going to be two completely different players this year. But with how good Nathan McKinnon's been, I'd have a tough time not having him at the top of my ballot if I were to be voting.
One more before we let you go. That final wild card spot, as mentioned, Washington, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh all still in the hunt. At the end of the day, who do you think's the second wild card in the East?
Another tough one there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Pittsburgh find a way in here. They're going to need help. They're going to need other people to to give up some points. You know, I could see them getting in that spot. At the same time, it's such a ripe schedule for Detroit. You get Montreal back to back, home and home, and Montreal's not a pushover. But things can't line up any better for you if you are the Red Wings. So those are the two teams that I'm looking up. Washington's got a tough schedule ahead, and they do play Philly on that final game. So those teams are taking points off each other. So I'll say Pittsburgh or Detroit, and right now with the advantage of 1 point that Detroit has, I would say that they're in the driver's seat.
The final week of the NHL's regular season is upon us. Thomas, thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy this final week. Should be a lot of fun. We'll do this again come playoff time.
For sure, guys. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Yep, thanks. Appreciate it. That's Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now an analyst for MSG and NHL Networks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Real quick from Sports Club stats, the percentages are the New York Islanders at 95%. The Islanders can clinch a playoff spot tonight with a victory of any kind over the New Jersey Devils. From there, it's the Red Wings with a 66.8% chance. The Capitals at 17.2%. The Penguins at 16.3%. And then the Flyers on the long shot of the bunch at 4.7%. So if you're just going to go on the numbers, again, courtesy of sportsclubstats.com, it'll be the Red Wings, who could have been eliminated on Saturday with a regulation loss in Toronto, but they won in overtime, and now they've got a 67% chance to make the postseason.
Okay, let's talk about the Canucks week coming up, maybe even week and a bit coming up. Yes. They play the Calgary Flames tomorrow. They can clinch the division with a point against the Calgary Flames. So there is a possibility that the Canucks could go into Winnipeg on Thursday, and that game could be meaningless for the Canucks, and frankly, it could be meaningless for the Winnipeg Jets.
It means because nothing to nobody.
Because the Winnipeg Jets could, in theory, have second spot clinched in the division, which means they would have home ice advantage against the Colorado Avalanche, and those teams are guaranteed to play each other. That's the first official matchup in the NHL.
The
NHL,
only one right now.
The only one that is 100% going to happen is Colorado and Winnipeg. Now, when will game one be for the Vancouver Canucks? I had first started hearing this over the weekend, and I guess Elliot Friedman put it out there on the most recent 32 Thoughts that Elliot, and this is what I've been hearing too, thinks the Canucks game one at Rogers Arena will be on Tuesday.
So a week tomorrow.
So that's interesting in a number of ways, because the Canucks would have a good break. And that means more rest for the likes of Thatcher Demko to sharpen up his game. And whether or not he plays in Calgary, I imagine he's going to play against Calgary on Tuesday at Rogers Arena. And then maybe depending how that start goes, he may or may not play the game in Winnipeg. But probably just one game for Thatcher Demko before the playoffs, I imagine. And then so the Canucks would play their final game on the 18th. And then they'd have a bunch of days off.
Five.
And game one would be on the 23rd. Mm-hmm. That's a Tuesday. Now, the playoffs overall start on Saturday, the 20th. So we go 3 days without the Canucks playing and everyone else playing playoff games. Well, no, not everyone else, but a lot of teams playing playoffs. Mm-hmm. And here's maybe an even more interesting thing. Let's say the Canucks do get the Nashville Predators
yep.
in the first round. The Nashville Predators wrap up their season tonight.
Right.
The Preds play their final game of the regular season tonight in Pittsburgh.
Huge game for the Penguins.
And then they would, if they play the Canucks, have, what, 8 days
off? 8 days off, yeah. Canucks would have five. Nashville would have eight.
Yeah.
It's
so that's a long layoff for both teams to the point where you're like, you like it for the Canucks. That gives them time for the rest. But you're almost kind of like, ugh, if I'm Nashville, I don't know if I want that much time off.
The things that I've heard from various people that work in the broadcasting industry over the weekend is that there's a lot of unanswered questions about when things are going to get going. And a lot of teams that are looking at proposed schedules and saying, a big break for us, like a long break, because the end of this regular season, it gets kind of janky for some teams. Some teams are done early this week, and some teams like the Vancouver Canucks aren't done until the end of the week. And with the series starting at any point, really, there's a lot of I'm hesitant to frame it as consternation, but there's a lot of teams like Nashville, for example. I don't think that they're clamoring at the idea of being off for 8 days, because there's that very fine line where rest becomes rust. You know, you've got a good thing going. You've got momentum. If you're healthy or relatively healthy, you'd like a couple days off. But 8 days in the course of an NHL season, that's the all-star break.
Yeah, especially for like one of the hotter teams, a team that's feeling pretty good about
itself. It's your vibes. It's your momentum. It's your mojo. It just comes to a halt, right? You can only practice so many times. I mean, that's a long vacation. Guys could go to Cabo and come back in 8 days. I mean, I'm not saying they'd do it. I'm not saying they wouldn't either. Anyway, we got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
There's an unsigned text that Halford got defensive about, but I think it's worth talking about. There are a lot more, quote-unquote, what-ifs still to be determined that you guys are not discussing. The Canucks can still play LA or Vegas legitimately, and they could still catch Dallas.
Okay. Well, yeah, Hold on. Mm-hmm. I didn't get defensive. I wrote back, which I thought was polite and very good of me as a host, saying, all due respect, but the Canucks have like a 5 to 6% chance of catching Dallas for number one, so we're not going to spend a ton of time discussing that.
Right.
I mean, I'm more than
happy. If Dallas loses to St. Louis and the Canucks win their final two games and the Canucks have caught them, it's possible. You know, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But yeah, the Canucks could, I suppose, be the top seed in the Western Conference. That still is on the table, and that would change which wild card team they played. They play. Vegas could still catch the Kings, but most likely at this point, this is all most likely, and we were very sure to say that the only playoff series that is 100% locked in is Colorado and Winnipeg. I hope it's Nashville. I really do, because as well as the Preds have been playing, and, you know, maybe I'm jinxing myself here. Maybe this is our version of we want Florida. But I just, you know, a lot of the times I just look at the lineup, you sure. know, and I'm kind of like, yeah, the Canucks should beat that team.
Uh-huh.
The Canucks should beat that team. Mm-hmm. And I also look at things like goal differential. The Canucks are plus 55. The Preds are plus 23. You know, I would rather play Nashville than LA, which has plus 42. Mm-hmm. Now you can say, well, Vegas only has plus 23, but we all know what Vegas can be when they ramp it up and when they're fully healthy.
So here's the thing with Vegas right now. So they're on 96 points. So they're trailing LA by one, right? And mm-hmm. they're trailing Nashville by three. Vegas's final two games of the regular season are both at home, and they are against the lowly Chicago Blackhawks and the lowly Anaheim Ducks. I would say, given what the Vegas Golden Knights need to do, which is play as many of their guys as possible to get some chemistry, because they have some guys coming back from injury, new guys like Hurdle trying to get in the lineup. It seems like they're all systems go. Like mm-hmm. they're not resting guys right now. They're playing everybody. I'm going to conservatively suggest that the Vegas Golden Knights are likely to get 4 points from their final two games. I'm just saying it. I think they will. So that puts them at 100.
Yeah.
Now, that could throw some things into arrears. I mean, it could conceivably get them ahead of Nashville, who's on 99 points and only has one game left. I think the more interesting one, I think it's that third spot in the Pacific. I think that's the one that's really up for grabs.
What do you want to see? Do you want to see Vegas Oilers?
My first round matchups, I'd like to see right now. Winnipeg and Colorado is already taken care of, so that's okay. Set.
Do you want to see Canucks and Preds? Yes or
no? I would love to see Canucks and Preds.
Okay. Do you want to see Oilers-Vegas?
Yes.
Do you want to see that more?
And I would like to see LA take on Dallas, because whatever. I don't care.
I don't have strong feelings about either team.
You know what? If LA,
not to disrespect them, but like I don't care about them.
At the end of that series, if LA beat Dallas, it'd be like, cool. But if Dallas beat LA, I'd also be like, all right, fine. Like, I don't care. I think Edmonton-Vegas first round would be chef's kiss great.
I hate it when you when you make the sound on the radio. It does. It sounds like
it's a moist kiss.
It's very moist. Oh,
it doesn't even sound like a kiss.
Yeah,
Point being,
it's like saying cream.
I don't care for that word.
Chef's cream.
I think it would be great because I think.
Yikes. That, oh no.
This, put it this way.
I will never recover from this.
I'm trying to work through it. The one of those teams losing in the first round, it would be a colossal disappointment, you know, because Vegas is the defending Stanley Cup champion that I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but they kind of pushed all their chips all in at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Edmonton losing in the first round.
That would be a disaster.
Right? Now,
if Edmonton losing in the first round, with all due respect to every team in the will be the biggest disaster. 100%. There's not a single team out there that has more on the line in the playoffs, in my opinion, than the Edmonton Oilers.
Because there would be huge regret, because they would look back and they would say, what if we didn't screw around for the first 20 games of the season and dig this huge hole and, you know, cost our head coach his job and all that.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.